So I guess we've reached the end of season one. What are we going to see?
So I want to do a little bit about the fruit trees. We had a little bit of a setback in the bed that we planted. We'll talk about what we've done over there. We've got peacock babies.
Okay, I can't wait to see that.
You remember you did all that plowing? Well, the corn is up.
I don't even know what a baby peacock looks like.
We're awaiting the foals. Foals are going to start in just a few weeks.
Here we go. I don't know what Robert's going to put me through, but we're going to find out.
We're going to put you on to work.
Well, hello, everyone. We're here at Drs. Robert and Jill Malone's farm. It looks like we're going to reach the end of season one. It's been a long journey, and we're going to finish it up with a farm episode, as you can see. We've done a lot on the farm up to now. We've been away for a little while, and we got to kind of catch up and see how things have developed. And clearly, the emu has developed substantially since the last time we were here, and many other things. And of course, the people like the farm episodes, which we weren't sure about. When we started this. So it's exciting.
They all want to see the farm episodes.
So what are we going to see?
So I want to do a little bit about the fruit trees. A couple episodes ago, we pruned the trees, and there was fear that we were over pruning.
They look amazing.
I'm kind of
shocked.
Yeah, they're thriving.
You know, you're just amazing what vegetation does, right?
But we have some challenges now that have happened with the fruit trees. The whole focus here is what can we do to control the pests and the parasites and the deer and everything else without having to resort to chemicals. We had a little bit of a setback in the bed that we planted. So we'll talk about what we've done over there. You know, share with our viewers some of the tips and tricks that we've picked up that are more and more people are starting to use in their gardens. We've got peacock babies.
Okay, I can't wait to see that.
We've been successful in hatching them out. We're getting about 80% hatch, which is huge for peacocks. Mm. Because we're using a good incubator, and so we'll show the incubator.
I don't even know what a baby peacock looks like, so it's going
to
be interesting.
They're different from chickens.
Right.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. You remember you did all that plowing? Well, the corn is up. It all needs weeding. Sorry, you're going to have to come back, and I'll put you on the sharp end of a hoe. And then, you know, these guys are continuing to grow and just become a key part of the farm. And we're awaiting the foals. Foals are going to start in just a few weeks. We've got six in the pregnant mares right now waiting to come out. The horse training continues.
Well, so we're gonna deliver in spades today, folks. So here we go. I don't know what Robert's going to put me through, but we're going to find out.
We're going to put you on to work. So the fruit trees have been kind of always an issue. And so we had a question, what are we going to do about this? Are we going to go ahead and spray the tree with pesticides? And so we looked around for the natural remedy. It's something called Tanglefoot. And so what this is a really sticky preparation. And then when the ants come try to climb up the trunk, they get stuck. We have these three problems of the Japanese beetles, and then we've got a herd of about 12 deer that didn't used to be here. We had one or two, but now we've got a lot of deer pressure. We have the problem of the ants coming up to harvest and picket the fruit, which damages the fruit. As you can see, we have fruit with little holes in it and all this kind of tumorous-like granularity from the insect pressure on it. Mm-hmm. So what we're going to do is go ahead and put the Tanglefoot on. Now, these wrappings are here to protect the young trees from sunburn, largely. Mm-hmm. But you can see that underneath that wrapping, we've had other insects kind of parasitize this. And so what we do with the Tanglefoot is...
Want to come over here, Goose?
We put some wrapping on it to protect the tree trunk from the Tanglefoot. And then here's the Tanglefoot product, a sticky goo. It's like a glue, only it stays fluid. And we just spread it on. It gets all over everything. It's a real attractant to the ants.
The bark doesn't like it either.
Yeah, so that's why we have to put the protective stuff on it.
Right.
So now we're pretty well protected against ants coming up. So we got that part down. Now what are we going to do about the Japanese beetles and the deer? And this netting product is really sweeping both nurseries and gardens and small gardens. A lot of small gardeners are really going to using this. It's just a plastic netting, particularly hard to cut. So here, if you want to grab an end, let's spread this out. Because we're going to have to basically open it up and then cut it in half, because that's too much for this little tiny tree.
We're getting a little bit of support here.
Of course, everything has to be investigated. Perfect. Okay, so now we've got that split into halves. Now, if you'll take a side of this, we just want to kind of lift this over it. Easier said than done. Perfect. There we go. And get it centered. Okay. And now these are clips that are made for this kind of netting.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's quite fine netting, but it's quite porous as well.
Exactly. So you get all the sun through that you want. You can get the water through, etc. But the bugs, the Japanese beetles in particular, the bugs can't come in and the deer can't chew through it. So what we want to do is take these ends and just tie a loose knot, because this stuff is strong enough, it'll last for years if you take care of it. So just gathering it and clipping it, yeah, perfect. Mm-hmm. For this little tree, he's going to get dry. And we want to do things that will both feed the tree and retain the water, the moisture underneath the tree.
And it doesn't matter that it feels kind of squashed there on top.
No, not at all. What matters is those leaves are not going to get eaten by the deer and by the Japanese beetles. Let's jump on the tractor and you and I go get some mulch. And
great.
We can mulch this tree.
How wide do you want this?
That's about right. So just kind of spread it even. And there's already some insects that are caught in our trap. So that's perfect. That little tree is really going to appreciate that.
It's, you know, doing this kind of work is incredibly clarity creating in the mind. I mean, and I think this, you know, when you're doing your Substacks, when you're doing your analysis, I imagine this is actually an important part of getting there.
So thanks for saying that.
Yeah.
And I think it's been one of the core messages of our Fallout series is work-life balance. Mm-hmm. It's important to let yourself do some recreational stuff, to do some manual labor, get your fingers dirty, and get a little exercise. Okay, so let's take a break from this and go work on the garden a little bit.
I think, Goose, can you take the tractor back, please?
So Jan, you'll remember that when you were last here, we planted this bed and it looked quite a bit different. It was lower, the level of the soil, and the soil that we were using was a commercial preparation. It's become a hot topic in gardening to avoid the use of peat, which comes from peat bogs, peat bogs are now considered to be a protected important ecosystem and relatively rare. And so the whole gardening industry has decimated peat bogs, in particularly in Canada, mm-hmm. where a lot of it comes from, and also in the United Kingdom. So the trend is to go with a non-peat based mulch or compost. Mm-hmm. But the compost that I put in here commercially before, which was sterile, didn't have a whole lot of nutritional value.
Right.
And so the truth is that we planted all those lovely seeds, but only some of them came up. And when they came up, the bugs got on them, and they didn't thrive because they didn't have enough nutrition in the soil. Hmm. And so what I did is I just had to redo this bed. And I brought in horse manure from over there. And the problem with using horse manure, which is great in terms of fertilizer, but the problem is it's full of weed seed. Because the weeds have adapted to basically pass through the gut of these herbivores. When I went and tilled that horse poop into the mulch that was here before, the compost, there were no worms. Not a single worm in the material that I'd bought. And when I scooped this, every scoop had multiple worms in it, great big fat worms. And then we took some started plants. So what we have here is some bell peppers and some sweet potato. And then we also scattered some seeds, and that included radishes, pimentos, poblano peppers. And what we found was that the poblanos are starting to come up. I can show you, here's an example.
And you know, we have our, we have this famous famous netting here again.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, this is because we're having problems with the bugs. Here's a bug that wants to get in and munch on our plants.
Right.
And this has become more and more common now, to use this netting as a way to keep both the bugs and the deer off of the garden, because the deer will come through and just chew this thing down. And not to mention the emu and the goose. Mm-hmm. And so you can see that we've got a fair amount of weeds, but we've got some peppers coming up too. But some of these peppers are being chewed on. You can see that, see?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so here's another one. Here's another pepper. And then we've got all this. A lot of this is what the locals call pigweed. It's a nasty local weed, and it develops spikes. And basically, nobody will eat it, you know, the horses or anybody else, except for pigs. Pigs will plow right through it, apparently, so that's why it's called pigweed,
right,
by the locals.
Yeah.
And I'll bet if I dig down,
oh man,
there's a good chance I'm going to see a worm. Maybe not,
but they're absolutely in there. It's amazing dark soil.
That's the kind of thing we want to see. Mm-hmm. And what we're going to do, Jill and I have decided that we're just going to let the weeds and the peppers start to grow. Here's radishes. You can see the radishes are really thriving. Mm-hmm. But we absolutely had to create something that is going to keep the insect predation down. So that's this structure of hoops. Very simple stuff.
Yeah,
anybody can
PVC
do this at
pipe,
home.
Right?
It's just half-inch Schedule 40 PVC pipe. These are 10-foot lengths, and this is a 4-foot wide raised bed. And it just turns out that that works perfectly. And then what I do, there's a lot of ways you could solve this problem. You could drill holes into the wood with a great big bore and slip the pipe into that. But what I've done is just taken these cheap galvanized straps that plumbers use to hang pipes.
Right.
And that seems to really do a good job for not too much money. And in this case, I've left this bed open. In this one, we've got a combination of onions around the edge, shallots. Shallots are an onion type that's really popular in the UK. Jill's family is British. And one of the home things that her mother used to always do that I loved and Jill loves is pickled onions. Ooh. And to make pickled onions, you need good shallots. And the only way you can get good shallots really in the United States is by growing them yourself. And we're having pressure from goose and emu. You can see how the onions and the shallots are starting to get mm-hmm. picked at. And I just wanted to show, so this is the typical 10-foot length Schedule 40 half-inch PVC pipe that you can get at your home supply store. And I'll tell you, this is the first year I've done this, made these bows. And I was afraid that this stuff would break when you bend it like this. But just to show, it goes just fine. It's super flexible, but you want to get the Schedule 40. That's the thicker stuff. Seems paradoxical. You'd think the thicker stuff is going to be too stiff. And then what, here you can see what happens is you just attach one end with those little brackets, those galvanized brackets. And then I draw a vertical line and set the brackets on the other side and then just bend it, slip it in. And then later on, I'll come back and put screws in the other side to lock this in. Yeah, so let's set up the netting on this one, keep the bugs off. So we got another one of these packages of this insect bird barrier. Just about perfect. Now it's kind of like we've stretched the bed sheet. Now what we have to do is tuck the corners. So you were asking me about things that have happened on the farm since you were last here, and last weekend we had basically a little mini tornado touchdown in the back of the farm. It took out a bunch of trees that were about this big around. And what I found was this brand new power pole, just put in this last year, just got snapped like a matchstick. The power of the weather is amazing. This storm, whether it was mini tornadoes or whatever, kind of went through that way and took out a whole bunch of power lines.
It's you know, interesting when you realize this kind of reminds you how important this sort of basic infrastructure is.
Absolutely. Right? Yeah. Now our question is, do we want a generator or do we want to set up a solar system with battery backup? And I'm kind of biased towards going with a solar system because the problem with the generators is you either got to have diesel or LP gas brought in. And both of those are starting to get expensive. So, Jan, I'd like to show you another thing that's happened here on the farm since you were last here. And that's been this amazing success Jill has had in hatching out peacock eggs. We've got a as you saw before, we have a bunch of peacocks, hens and cocks, and they started laying. So we've been collecting the eggs every day. We get two or three eggs. And Jill's been putting them in the incubator in batches.
So, yeah, so we've had really good hatch rates with our peafowl this year, and part of it is that we have a really nice incubator. And with this incubator, we can adjust the temperature because different poultry need different, the eggs need different temperatures to hatch, and we can adjust the humidity. The peafowl, the peahens, lay eggs, and we collect them, and we just let them sit because they won't start developing until they start getting warm. So I'll collect them over the week, and then I put them in the incubator all at the same time. The other thing this incubator does is the mother bird will roll the eggs a few times a day, and so this actually turns the eggs every 2 hours. I have a plate of eggs. I take a pen and I mark them all with the date, actually a pencil, and then I put them in the incubator. So peacocks take about 29 days to hatch, and so at day 26, I pull these eggs out and I put them in the bottom of the incubator because at that point you don't want them turning. Then you watch, before they hatch, they will do what's called a peephole. They'll make a little tiny hole that says they're getting ready, and they take a rest and they get fresh oxygen. And then in the next day, they'll hatch. And that's it. And then on the top, we have a reservoir of water and gravity feed and a little float, like a toilet bowl float, so that it doesn't overflow, and so we don't have to worry about the humidity. Then I have the automatic egg turner, which I press, and then a little light comes on, and then every 2 hours, it'll turn. You can see that the egg tray moving. And it does that every 2 hours. Earlier this year, we hatched about 65 chicken babies all at the same time, and yeah, they all hatched. So some of those babies I sold, they're a specific breed, and the rest we're going to go ahead and process our own meat, which is going to be a new step for us. So we're about to start that, which is going to be kind of a big deal. So Jan, you wanted to see the baby peacock. So in the back of the barn, we have kind of an air-conditioned space that we keep our babies. And they're still under lights. Really soon, this batch is going to go outside into a separate little cage. Mm-hmm. Do you want to hold one?
Sure.
Okay. Sure.
I'll open.
Yeah.
Here.
Got it.
Now, we're not kind of traumatizing them here?
No. It's actually, I like to hold them and handle them. Mm-hmm. Because then when they get older, they're less traumatized if they get hurt, and you right. do have to handle them.
The birds, you really have to have a gentle, calm demeanor. Move really
Trying
slow.
Hard.
Yeah. Peafowl are in the pheasant family, so they're really quite flighty. Mm-hmm.
But that's actually an interesting point, that it's actually, you know, we're not doing anything untoward to the animal, and it's actually better for the animal to be handled more early on rather than...
Yeah.
Because we end up being their protectors, is the truth.
Yeah. Right.
The guineas most definitely see us. The guinea fowl, they follow us around if we're outside. They really, especially if we have any fox predation, they really want to be with us or with the dogs. Mm-hmm. We're not foxes.
Although I don't know if we've talked about this, but you know the emu is... The foxes are one of the reasons you have the emu in the first place, right?
Absolutely.
Yes.
Yeah.
The emu are like guard dogs. They will protect their flock.
So let's go take a peek at the moms and dads.
Well, so we were just going into the enclosure for the peacocks, and one of them just jumped out. And right now we're trying to reclaim it. She's looking impressive.
Come on, I want to show you the corn. It's planted in the row that you plowed. Remember all that tractor work you did? I let that set, and then I went it over with a rotor tiller. Then I went through, and it was still just wet as all get out. We'd had a lot of rain. I went through with the end of a broomstick and put holes and then drop corn seeds into them. Apparently corn, you gotta get about an inch deep.
It's amazing, you know, over time, when you're not here, you really see the difference. So I guess we've reached the end of our farm episode and we've reached the end of season one.
It's been quite a ride.
That's absolutely.
Eventful period of history, really. And we've covered it as it's happened. While still doing our best to maintain some balance.
I mean, I had a ton of fun. I got to, you know, learn how to work with farm equipment, till some soil, ride horses. I mean, wonderful time all along. We created a garden. So let's go a little bit deeper. What did we accomplish here?
Well, when you and I were discussing this, and we were discussing it for almost a year before we started shooting it, we discussed that there seems to be a hunger for information about living closer to the land, about homesteading, whether it's backyard chickens or setting up a greenhouse. Small to large, the idea that anybody can do it. You don't have to have a farming background. You've kind of served in the role of somebody who doesn't have a strong farming background, and yet you were able, you know, with no problem at all, to drive the tractor, plow the ground, work the bucket, get involved in planning. And I hope that this shows our viewers that they can do it too, and that they don't have to resort to pesticides and herbicides and all that kind of stuff. And I think we covered in some of our episodes some of the toxicities associated with some of these agents that are being used in modern farming: desiccants, glyphosate, some of these other things that are turning out to have reproductive harms, and all other kinds of toxicity, and that are damaging our land, which is our legacy, really. What we're experiencing here on this little farm with our horses, and the gift of having horse manure that we can plow back into the soil, is that we can bring it back to life. This was pretty sterile when we moved in. It was just an overworked hay field. And gradually, now we have good grass. We have really a little botanical garden. We have more and more diversity in our animals.
So the other thing I want to highlight here is that, you know, we really didn't, aside from me learning how to, you know, ride a horse, where we had, you know, a, you know,
double
medal
gold
winner, medal winner to teach me. We didn't really set anything up here. This is just how you actually live.
That's true.
Which is, I think, you know, I don't know if everyone's fully aware of that, because we live in this world of kayfabe where everything, you don't know what's truth, what's reality, what's the mix, right? And this is actually the way you live.
So. We just saw Tad and Kelly. She had a little art exhibit down the road in Charlottesville 2 days ago, and got to meet some of their children. They're familiar with fallout and familiar with the kind of things we're doing with their fans.
I need attention.
Clearly. These are just the people in our lives. I think... Again, going back to that, if you have work-life balance, allow yourself some calm time, some downtime, and just be open to things around you. It's like it creates a circle of peace and acceptance around you, and people gravitate to that. You end up, especially here in Northern Virginia, I don't know what it is. Somebody once said there must be something in the water, because you had Jefferson and Madison's farm is just a little bit over there. There's something about this area that seems to foster people who value freedom, who live in a balanced way, both with the whole intense politics and intellectual world of D.C., but there's a whole lot of D.C. folks that like to get out of town, and where do they go? A lot of them go right around here. Mm-hmm. And I think it's because of this calm peacefulness and lack of crowding and the ability to kind of get back to nature a little bit. So I'm grateful that you've had the time and interest to do this and followed the suggestions of our little readership community, that they love the farm segments. I get that again and again and again. There's two things that people love most about our Substack, and it's not my political writing. It's the farm segments, and it's Jill's funnies. Those are the things that people really want to read.
So I think we've reached the end of this episode, and indeed it's the end of season one, and we'll see you next time. I had a cat, so I think I can have a goose. Oh.